ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Saha.
With deliberation, one will see that the super soul. With deliberation, one will see that the supreme soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. The total material energy is the cause of material manifestation, but the material energy is caused by him. Therefore, he is the cause of all causes. The manifester of intelligence and the senses, he is perceived as the supersoul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. As that supersoul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The words Sarva Vastuni Vastu Swarupa indicate that the Supreme Lord is the active principle of everything. As described in Brahma Samhita, Eko Pyasora Chayetam Jagadanda Kotim Yachchaktirasti Jagadanda Chayayadanta Andantadasta Padamanu Chayantadastam Govinda Madhipurusham Tamaham Pajami. I worship the personality of Godhead, Govinda, who enters the existence of every universe and every atom by one of his plenary portions, and thus manifests his infinite energy throughout the material creation. By his one plenary portion as Paramatma, Antaryami, the Lord is all-pervading throughout the unlimited universes. He is the Pratyak, or Antaryami, of all living entities. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Kshetragyam chapimam vidi sarvakshetre shubharata. O scion of Bharat, you should understand that I am also the knower in all bodies. Because the Lord is the Supersoul, he is the active principle of every living entity, and even the atom. Andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam. He is the actual reality. According to various stages of intelligence, one realizes the presence of the Supreme in everything through the manifestations of his energy. The entire world is permeated by the three gunas, and one can understand his presence according to one's modes of material nature. With deliberation, one will see that the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. The total material energy is the cause of the material manifestation, but the material energy is caused by him. Therefore, he is the cause of all causes, the manifester of intelligence and the senses. He is perceived as the supersoul of everything. Without him, everything would be dead. You, as that supersoul, the supreme controller, are the only one remaining. We are reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, entitled The Appearance of the Demon Vritrasura. In the earlier pages, we find the ever-repeating dilemma of the demigods. They are the wealthiest, most powerful, most prestigious beings within the universal creation. But yet, because they are within this material creation, nothing is consistent. Padam padam yad vipadam natesham. There is always danger. Whoever we are, whatever we achieve, because that is the nature of this world. Krishna declares in Gita, dukalayam ashashvatam. It is like this because everything is temporary. There is always a battle. The modes of nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are battling each other within the external world and within each and every heart. Our virtuous nature, our pious or spiritual nature, is constantly under attack by our lower nature. The propensity to do good is always under siege of our propensities to commit sinful, selfish activities. Gauranga Prabhu declares that they cannot hear. Whoever is the demigod in charge of the sound system is under attack from Gauranga Prabhu. Can you hear now? Haribo. In this world, anything good entails a struggle to preserve. We understand the virtue of humility, but from within and without, the false ego is attacking. Sometimes we recognize the attack because it is grossly obvious, but other times, even if we don't know it, on a very subtle level, something is happening. Therefore, even these very powerful, wealthy, successful persons, such as the devatas, they are regularly defeated. And when they are in such a dangerous condition, they understand their own vulnerable condition and they turn to God, the Supreme Lord. Although they are intelligent and wise, they have great knowledge, but due to being caught up in the perplexities of life, that knowledge is covered again and again. They simply forget. Intellectually, they may understand, but still, practically, they don't live by that understanding. It becomes obscured by the passions of life. This happens. We may read scriptures. We may hear from great souls. We may have learned from our family, our parents. We know what is right. We know what is wrong. We know what is truth. But the circumstances around us, the passions of trying to deal with this world and our own desires and trying to fulfill them and trying to protect and preserve what we have, that knowledge is covered. It's somewhere way in the background. When we come to a class, we say, yes, I know that. But then when we go into life, what is the use of knowing it if we do not practice it? Powers beyond our own eclipse our true understanding of our real welfare and our true goal in life. This is what is happening in this particular story. These dynamic personalities were so caught up in their own egos. Indra committed such a sin. He literally killed a person who was his well-wisher, who saved him from destruction, Vishwarup, just because he saw that Vishwarup, although saved him and his whole dynasty, also had some sympathy toward his enemy. He considered that such a threat that he lost his intelligence and engaged in a horrible activity. And the father of Vishwarup, who was a mystic yogi, performed a yajna and created a son, the son of Tvashta, Vitrasura, who was so powerful. In the verse that describes the qualities of Vitrasura, his body was huge like a burnt mountain. He was dancing and screaming. He appeared unconquerable, as if holding the three worlds on the points of his blazing trident. Dancing and shouting with a loud voice, he made the entire earth tremble, as if from an earthquake. As he yawned again and again, he seemed to be trying to swallow the whole sky with his mouth, which was as deep as a cave. He seemed to be licking up the stars in the sky with his tongue and eating the entire universe with his long, sharp teeth. Seeing this gigantic demon, everyone in fear ran here and there in all directions. Now, what do you do when you are face to face against him? It is a philosophical truth that whoever you are within this world, there's always someone who can create great damage to everything you are and whatever you stand for. So the demigods, from their heart of hearts, they turned to the Lord and they prayed. So sincerely that the Lord first appeared within their hearts and then manifested himself right before their eyes. And in the prayers we are reading in this particular section of Srimad Bhagavatam, they're humbling themselves through so many philosophical truths. They're exclaiming that the three modes of nature are very powerful: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And in this world, except for one who is a Paramhamsa, a completely liberated soul, there is a battle within the heart of these three modes of nature. According to the mode that is predominantly controlling us, we take sides with one of those influences. Those who are trying to be good have to fight against passion and ignorance. However, those who try to live in the mode of passion, they have to fight the mode of ignorance. But the mode of goodness is quite passive. It doesn't put much of a fight up to those who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. And those who are in the mode of ignorance, passion is quite passive. In this world, the lower the mode you go, the more it automatically works. That is why the Puranas are divided in the way they are. For those who are in the mode of ignorance, you have to fight. You have to battle. You have to follow regulative principles to come to the mode of passion. If you're passive, you'll just go deeper and deeper and deeper down into tamaguna or ignorance. When you're in the mode of passion, that passion is so all-devouring, it's controlling you. But at the same time, the mode of ignorance is fighting to pull you down lower and lower and lower. Yes? Lust is passion. Kama esha, krodha esha. But anger is ignorance. Yes? So when there is this passion, whether it is gross or subtle, when it is unfulfilled, anger tries to, the mode of ignorance in the form of anger tries to pull you down lower. You can't even stay in the mode of passion without fighting like anything. And for those who want to be in the mode of goodness, these two lower modes are always attacking. Sometimes in a subtle way and sometimes in a gross way. Just like in warfare, surprise attacks are very powerful. If you understand when your enemy is off guard, you can catch them in a vulnerable position. And there's better chances of defeating them. And in order for the enemy to be off guard, the enemy has to feel that presently there's no danger. That they have control over you. Yes? They're in a strong position. And they don't know where you are or where you're coming from. Or if they think they do, you're actually somewhere else with a different idea. So this surprise attack coming in from a direction that they're not expecting. The calm before the storm. That is how material energy works. Therefore, in this battle to attain and preserve goodness within our own life, we must be ever vigilant and on guard, not to be exploited and defeated. In this particular verse, the demigods, they are praising the Supreme Lord as the cause of all causes. Ultimately, with deliberation, one will see that the Supreme Soul, although manifested in different ways, is actually the basic principle of everything. This is why the Lord can protect anyone in any condition if one genuinely takes shelter. Because essentially, everything is God, and at the same time, everything is not God. This is the philosophy of Achintya-bheda-bheda-tattva, inconceivable simultaneous one and difference. The impersonal school of philosophers understand the partial reality of the Absolute Truth. They declare and believe that everything is God. Everything is one. All variations, all personality is a product of illusion. But when we come above the illusions of duality, we realize that there is nothing but the Supreme One. We are that one. There is no second to that one. We become God. Because if there's nothing but God, then in the platform of pure reality, then everything is God. You are God. There is no differentiation anywhere. But a higher, more complete understanding than this is, yes, this is true. Everything is God, because everything emanates from God. Om Purnamada Purnamidam, the Ishopanishad declares that there is one absolute truth, and everything that exists, both material and spiritual, are emanations from that one supreme truth. And actually, how can material come from something spiritual? It's a contradiction. Because material is opposite to spiritual. Can darkness come out of the sun? Is there any trace of darkness in the sun? It is absolutely impossible. There cannot be darkness in the sun because the sun is pure light. Darkness means the absence of the presence of the sun. The absence cannot be in the presence of the sun. Wherever darkness may be, as soon as the sun is present, it is dispelled. So therefore, if darkness cannot come out of light, but it is due to the absence of light, if everything is emanating from God, therefore, everything is God, everything is spiritual. Maya is not. Maya, according to this definition, cannot come from God. Because Maya means illusion. And God is never in illusion. Illusion cannot come from God. Therefore, Maya means simply forgetfulness of the truth that God is everything and everywhere, and God is the only reality, and nothing exists without Him. But there's several problems with this philosophy. One is, from rational, logical, common sense, it doesn't make sense. If you really go deeper into it. And the other is, it is not completely supported by the scriptures. Parashya shaktir vivadaiva shruyate. That everything does emanate from God. Nothing exists that is not of God. Therefore, everything is God. But the Lord has inconceivable potencies. And although these potencies are non-different from Him, they are simultaneously different from Him. In the sense that they are springing from the origin, but they are separated from the origin. This material energy is one of the three primary energies of the Lord. The material energy is eternal. But all manifestations within material energy are temporary. Ultimately, you cannot destroy matter. You can only transform it. Ultimately, everything is eternal. Nothing is temporary. But manifestations are temporary. Because matter is constantly in the process of transformation. And what is the power that stimulates that transformation and perpetuates that transformation? It is God in His Kalarupa, a form of time. Krishna says in the Gita, time I am. Time is Krishna in His supreme manifestation within material energy. And it is that power of God in time that is activating all the various transformations within material nature. Nothing is ever stagnant. Because our perceptions are grossly tuned through our senses and our mind that we only see on a certain level of time. It seems that things are stagnant. We look at this stone wall. It seems like it's the same every day. And in 1,000 years, hopefully, when devotees are sitting here for Srimad Bhagavatam class, because that by that time they'll probably be changing the floor in the temple again. The stone walls will still look the same. For 1,000 years, same carving, same stone. Carved in stone. That is a statement which gives a sense of permanence. But actually, it's only because according to how we're programmed, our senses, by time, we can only perceive it to a certain extent. But actually, the atomic particles, are they not, Brishabhanu Prabhu? They're not fast asleep for thousands of years. The atomic particles, they're moving. They may be moving with less velocity than in something like fire or water. But still, they're in the process of transformation. And in due course of time, it may be 10,000 years, this wall is going to disintegrate. Does that mean that all of a sudden in 10,000 years it disintegrates? The process of disintegration is taking place now. It just takes that long for it to discriminate, to turn to powder. Whereas a flower, within hours, we see it start disintegrating. It's simply under a different, an influence of different sequence of time. In this world, everything is controlled by time. Nothing is stagnant, ever. Even 1/12,000, 1/12th of a second, alabha matra, 1/12th of a second, nothing within the entire creation is stable and stagnant. Everything is in a state of transformation and change. That is Krishna's power of time. But nothing is destroyed. Destruction is just how something appears. Yes? When the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at the end of the life of Brahma, at the time of the Mahapralaya, with the help of Lord Shiva, everything is destroyed. Practically nothing is left within the material creation. We call that destruction. But actually, is it destroyed? All the material elements are simply brought are simply transformed in a certain way, and then they enter into the body of Mahavishnu. And then that same material energy, with all of its, begins to manifest itself in another way during the next creation. So material energy is the Lord's energy. Therefore, it is eternal. But under the power of time, the three modes of material nature create dynamic changes everywhere, in everything. Even the stone wall is being activated by time due to the three modes of material nature. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave example of the redwood trees in California, in the northern side. According to the scientists, some are 5,000 years old, up to 7,000 years old. And they're living beings. It's a person who's alive. One spirit soul is in that body for 5,000 years. That one tree, and there are many such trees, they were standing there when Krishna was performing his pastimes in Vrindavan. That tree was standing there when Lord Buddha was meditating under one of his relative trees in Bodh Gaya. That tree was standing there when Shankaracharya came and drove the Buddhists out of India with his Advaita philosophy. He was there for Madhvacharya, Ramanujacharya, Lord Chaitanya. What to speak of all the wars. All the wars and all the economic growths and collapses, the rise of the Roman Empire and the fall of the Roman Empire, the rise of the Greek Empire and the fall of the Greek Empire, the rise of the American Empire, and what is to come, we will see. That tree will be watching. That's matter. One body. Constantly changing. Never a second is that, but it's just changing in that particular form with a different velocity than a human being who could live at the most 120 years. But change is there. Now, Sukadeva Goswami says, what is the use of living a long, long life like such a tree? You see, that tree, unless somebody sprinkles Charanamrita on its roots or has kirtan under the tree, that tree is simply, after 7,000 years of living in one body, standing there, it's just going to go to the next species of trees. What has it accomplished? Better one moment of full consciousness. Many of the greatest personalities that lived in this world, some live for long lives, many live for very short lives. But what they accomplished within their life was qualitatively so great. They attain perfection. Maharaj Katvanga, he taught the world that you can attain the supreme perfection of life, the greatest treasure of all treasures, in one moment, if you really concentrate on putting your mind to that alone. But in order to do that, you have to understand the need. If we study Maharaj Katvanga, he could have perfected his life in a moment any time. But he never did. Right? He was not a young person. Life was going by. He understood this theoretically.
But when he was told that you are going to die in one moment,
then he understood
the need. Then he took the knowledge he had seriously and applied it to his life practically. And he attained perfection in a moment.
How we utilize our time is what qualitatively makes human life great. When we strive for the eternal, we come closer to the eternal. When we're so much enraptured in the constant changes of this world, we become so caught up with that. We may succeed, we may fail, but in the end, all the transformations of the elements we're dealing with are gone as far as our life is concerned. And at the time of death, where is it? Neha bikramanasosti pratyavayo navidyate. But anything we do in the cause of God is eternal. The benefits are everlasting. So Krishna, or the Supreme Lord, is sarva karana karanam, the cause of all causes, the cause of everything. And as Krishna says in Gita, daivi heshu kunamayi mama maya duratyaya mam evamye papadyante mayam etatarantite. The modes of material nature are very strong. This material nature is difficult to overcome. And for the little soul, the spirit soul, it is impossible to overcome the Lord's material energy. These three primary energies of the Lord are of great importance to understand. There is the spiritual energy, which is not influenced by the modes of material nature and not influenced by time. The spiritual energy is eternal. And there is the material energy, which is eternal, but all manifestations under the influence of time are temporary. And between the two is the tatashta shakti, which is the living entity or the spirit soul, which is mamaivamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, part and parcel of the supreme spiritual energy. We are part of God. If we were God in the full sense, we would be the controller of all controllers. God never comes under the influence of his own material energy. He is always the master of material energy. So if we are God, how is it that we could come under illusion? How is it that we are identifying with birth, old age, disease, and death? How is it that we are suffering? The absolute truth is Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. There's no suffering for God. Why are we suffering? In situations beyond our control. In situations where we're more or less helpless within this world. We have some power, but in other situations, we're quite helpless. It is because the soul is part of God, qualitatively one with God, but quantitatively only a part, like the ray of the sun in relation to the sun planet. We are spiritual. We are eternal. We are full of knowledge. We are full of bliss. But nityo nityanam chetanas chetananam eko bahunam yovadadati kaman. We are always subordinate to either the material or spiritual energy of the Lord. In other words, we're always subordinate to the Lord in one of his two primary energies.
either material energy under time in the three modes or spiritual energy, where we enter into the eternal pastimes of love with the Lord. And we have free will. The essence of life is simply how we utilize our free will. Either we deliberately surrender or take shelter of the spiritual energy of the Lord, the mercy of the Lord, or we practically, in this material energy, automatically, naturally, are under the subjugation of the material energy of the Lord. You see, in the soul's natural state, there's no fight, there's no battle. We are situated in bliss, always. There's no wars on the spiritual level. Kurukshetra, there was a good war, but that was enacted to show us how to deal with material energy. But in this material world, there's always wars, within and without. Arjuna represents the soul that wants to attain the liberated state of being in one with the purpose of God's will. Srila Prabhupada explains to become one with God in a practical way is that our will, our desire is one with God's desire. In Kurukshetra, it was the goodness of Arjuna's desire to fulfill the pure plan of God that was being attacked by the envious powers of Duryodhana. And Krishna spoke the 700 verses of Gita to teach us how to fight that battle. He didn't talk about organizing military phalanxes. He didn't talk about shooting bows and arrows. He didn't talk about how to utilize the club and other such weapons. He was speaking about the internal battle within our minds. In Bhagavad Gita, perhaps more than any other literature in the world, teaches us very specifically, step by step, what is the enemy that we're really fighting? What is the nature of that enemy? And how to overcome that influence? And in essence, Daivi yeshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya mam evamye prapadyante maya me tatarantite. This material nature is impossible to overcome. It is too powerful. But one who takes shelter of the Supreme Lord can easily cross beyond it. Srimad Bhagavatam tells that trying to cross over material nature is like trying to swim across an ocean. But one who takes shelter of the Lord, the quantity of water in that ocean is reduced to the quantity of water within the hoof print of a small calf. It can be easily overcome. Now, some of us may be thinking that I'm taking shelter of the Lord. But still, I don't see these calf prints. I'm still dealing with this ocean every day. But the more we realize the length and the breadth and the depth of the ocean, the more we realize how we have to go deeper into our sincerity in taking shelter of the Lord. It is something that is very real. It is in this spirit that we should chant the holy names. It is in this spirit that we should pray. It is in this spirit that we should perform our devotional activities. It is in this spirit that we should conduct our lives in whatever we may be doing. After all, for those who are grihastas, who are in household status of life, to make a living, to prosper, to progress, to be successful more and more and more, it's a battle. It's a struggle. It's not easy. How to be taking shelter of the Lord when we're in this struggle for existence within this world, either economically or socially, or just in terms of keeping body and soul together. It's a struggle. How to somehow or other take shelter of the Lord in that situation? To be a brahmachari in the ashram, it seems like it's very direct and clear how to take shelter of the Lord. And everything they're doing is taking shelter of the Lord. But it's not that easy. Why so few people survive in the brahmachari ashram? Hare Krishna. It's a battle there too. It's a battle everywhere. That is why it is very important, the basic principles of bhakti, to associate with devotees who uplift our hearts, who keep our intelligence properly focused. Because within this world, whatever we're doing, this is a great danger. That the circumstances both around us and within us distract our attention away from the focus of our real purpose of life. But if we regularly have association of people who are fixed or struggling to keep that focus, then our intelligence is stable and it will proceed. No matter what happens, if we have proper association, we won't lose sight of the goal. Nor will we lose the way in which we can achieve the goal. And through that association, we understand the value of our spiritual practices or sadhana. It keeps our consciousness anchored at the lotus feet of the Lord. If you're in a boat in this ocean of material existence, any wave can just catapult you in a direction according to its own whim. And then the next wave pushes you in another direction, and the next wave pushes you in another direction. The mind is full of those waves. The world around us and influences are full of those waves, pushing us in one direction and another direction and in another direction. But if we have strong spiritual practice and the association of good influences in our life, it keeps us fixed. No matter how many waves may push us, we remain focused. In the integrity of our life, the integrity of our actions, the integrity of our thoughts, cannot pull us away from that. Agitations, difficulties, tragedies, traumas, temptations, they will come and they will go in this world. But how is it affecting our purpose in life and the integrity of how we live? We need that anchor to keep us stable. And Rupa Goswami explains the five most powerful aspects of our spiritual practice. One is the association of saintly people. Another is hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, the holy scriptures, regularly. Nasta praesha bhadresha. To hear Sukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, and all the acharyas speaking to us on a regular basis is of tremendous merit. To worship the deity through prayer, through devotional services, through focusing our consciousness, through utilizing all of our mind and all of our senses and all of our propensities in the service of God. To come to holy places, to become spiritually revived. But of all spiritual practices, especially in this age of Kali, that keep our mind focused on the one supreme cause of all causes, the chanting of God's names is most effective. Kalera dosanide rajan asti heka mahanguna kirtanad eva krishnasya mukta sanga parambrajait. In this age of Kali, which is like an ocean of faults, there is one great benediction. Simply by chanting the name of the Lord, one can attain the supreme perfection of liberation. Param vijayate sri Krishna sankirtanam. Therefore, it is the prime benediction for all humanity. Because in any situation, anyone, rich or poor, literate or illiterate, man or woman, old or young, black or white or red or yellow, from the east or the west or the north or the south, everyone has equal ability and opportunity to take shelter of the Lord's name. Not only anyone, but at any place and in any time. If you wake up in the middle of the night, you may not be able to do puja. In the dark, you cannot read Srimad Bhagavatam. But you could chant the name of the Lord. I know people who living in strange places where they're being haunted in their sleep, being strangled and choked. Very desperate situation by these ghostly forces. Realities. So hundreds and hundreds of people we have met in this situation. We have been in such situations. In that situation, you can't just pick up a Srimad Bhagavatam or perform achman and do offer arti. What to speak of, you know, get on the August Kranti to Vrindavan or Mathura. In such a situation, there's only one thing. Hare Krishna. And then everything is fine. The sun rises, the darkness is clearer, is dispelled. So this is the power of the holy name. But what is the philosophy behind the power of the holy name that we are reading about today? Because Krishna is the master and the cause of all his energies. He can lift us into the material, spiritual energy. He could lift us out of this material energy because he is non-different. The material energy is nothing but a manifestation of him. The spiritual energy is nothing but a manifestation of him. Everything is nothing but a manifestation of him. Therefore, if we take shelter of Krishna, nothing is impossible. Everything is possible because we are putting our hearts in the protection under the influence of the supreme love of God. Thank you very much. Is there any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Sometimes we have to work at the same time to four people. Like we have Bhagavatam lecture and at the same time we have Prasad distribution seva. And another part of the question, ki two of our senior devotees told us a different work to do at the same time. And we can do only one work. And we cannot tell the senior devotee, any one of them, no, we cannot do the one work. Then what are we supposed to do? My first part of the question, that at the same time we have two work to do, like Bhagavatam lecture and Prasad distribution seva. And another part of the question, ki two of our senior devotees told us to do different work at the same time. And we cannot tell one no because we don't have that much of time. What are we supposed to do in the both situation?
Take shelter of Krishna. To do Prasad Seva, we should be enthusiastic to do. But if we're not asked to do Prasad Seva, then we should be here in Srimad Bhagavatam class. But some people must volunteer because there are two types of Bhagavats, the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. Yes, Prasad Seva means service to the person Bhagavat. And sitting in Srimad Bhagavatam class means service to the book Bhagavat. So either one is perfect. But if we're not hearing Srimad Bhagavatam class, after some time we will lose our enthusiasm to serve Prasad also. So we should balance the two very nicely. We must hear sufficiently, but then we also implement the message through our service attitude on a regular basis. And as far as two different authorities asking you to do two different things, as long as they are both engaging you properly in Krishna consciousness, either one is quite perfect. But part of the perfection is either... whichever one you choose, you may be chastised by the other. And that chastisement is part of the process of taking shelter of Krishna.
But how can we decide the priorities? This is more... what we should do this first and this, but how we decide the priorities that we should do this first and then what is the way of that deciding the priorities?
You can inquire from, generally if you inquire from either of those authorities what the other is asking you to do, then there will be an agreement amongst themselves. Unless your two authorities are from two different temples. You should leave it for them to decide. Yes? You can say, I'm happy to do either one. The two of you can decide. And then let them decide. Hari Hari.
Maharaj, you mentioned about Maharaj Khatwanga that he was informed that he had only a few moments or one moment. In our case, we may not know. So how does one maintain that sense of urgency?
Actually, we do know. It's being told to us every day. that there is potential danger at every step. That's part of material nature. That eternally, every living entity within material nature is in a precarious situation. Like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. Any little tilting of the leaf and the water is gone.
Yes.
Any little tilting of the material nature and this little drop of our existence can be gone. Yes, that is reality. That is why it is important that we hear regularly. So that our awareness is fresh, clear, and alive. And when difficult situations come in our life, tate nukampam sushamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipagam, we understand that this is actually all for the good. And we should thank Krishna and take shelter. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Go Premanandi.